Welcome to Rocking Your Prayers. I'm your host, Dr. Alice Evans. Now, over the past 30 years, sub-Saharan Africa has seen zero change in gross national income per capita. What does that mean for gender? While sub-Saharan Africa has great diversity, especially by religion, economic class, and livelihood systems, one trend is clear, at least to me. In low-wage economies, girls tend to marry young, bear many children, and then remain trapped in back-breaking agriculture or trapped in saturated informal markets. Many are also at risk of violence, which remains normalized, largely due to poverty and conflict. Okay, sub-Saharan African women work at very high rate. So if one just looked at this one indicator, one might infer that the region is extremely gender equal. However, Dinkelman and Guy in the Journal of Economic Perspectives show that labour force participation includes unpaid drudgery on family farms. In Uganda, Tanzania, Ghana and South Africa, women are spending most of their days on this kind of home production, unpaid family work. Back-breaking drudgery in agriculture does not enhance women's status, social networks or independent autonomy. Indeed, it's not necessarily recognised as work. Subsisting on very low incomes, unable to afford domestic appliances like kettles, ovens or washing machines, sometimes without electricity or piped water, African women generally spend an enormous amount of time working in their homes. Even when sub-Saharan African women do work for markets, this is rarely in salaried employment. Dinkelman and Guy show that they're much more likely to have a little market stall or work for a family business without pay. So like in 2017, 15% of African women were contributing family workers, 30% were like own account workers. That means like, you know, you've got a one-man band market stall. So very, very low incomes. Whereas in North Africa, it's like 75% of women are just out of the labour force altogether. So it's important to recognise that North and sub-Saharan Africa face very different binding constraints. Across North Africa, men's honour depends on female seclusion. So women mostly remain at home. Whereas sub-Saharan African women are generally much more responsive to economic opportunities. Now, with economic growth, women in Mauritius, South Africa and Ghana have seized new jobs in services. Malawian women are equally mobile since they're not physically restricted. Many of those communities are matrilineal, but the country remains extremely poor and agricultural. So women are trapped in backbreaking hoe cultivation. Another thing about sub-Saharan Africa is state capacity is very, very weak. So economic stagnation inhibits government effectiveness. So even though sub-Saharan African parliaments include many female legislators and have passed many gender equal laws, implementation is weak. And there's a nice book on this by Peace Medhi looking at gender-based violence laws and implementation in West Africa. Now, here's a striking finding from David Evans, no relation, Susanna Harris, Peter Holland, and Amina Mendez Acosta. They find that 1 in 4 adolescent girls report that they have experienced sexual... 1 in 4 girls report that they have experienced violence, and 1 in 7 report having experienced sexual violence in the previous year. And they find this after analysing demographic and health surveys of the 20 most populous African countries. So that's 80% of the population. 1 in 4 adolescent girls reporting experienced violence, and 1 in 7 saying they've experienced sexual violence in the last year. So schools are not safe spaces, and neither are homes. David Evans and colleagues, they find that sub-Saharan African girls are just as likely to have experienced violence regardless of whether they attended school. Intimate partner violence is also very high in sub-Saharan Africa. This is strongly associated with low education and poverty, and that holds worldwide and within Africa. Poverty begets intimate partner violence in several ways. Economic desperation exacerbates stress and marital disputes. Impoverished girls wed early, with scant resources, support systems, or much understanding of the world. And child brides are much more likely to be abused. So here's a story. So one time a doctor and I were driving through rural Zambia, and by the roadside we saw a young girl. Her face was horribly swollen, her body was covered in cuts and stubbled hay. I wondered that maybe she had been dragged through a field. She was barely 16 and recently married. She wanted to run away. Where could she go? The other thing is that high fertility increases mothers' economic insecurity. So women who have 5 children and lack independent salaries may feel extremely dependent on their husbands. You know, who else will look after them? So as some of you know, I spent 6 months living in a shanty compound with a locally elected councillor in Kitwe, Zambia. This area was very poor. There were no streetlights, no tarmac roads, nor indoor water. We cooked by making fires and washed with a bucket behind a bush. Barely anyone had a salaried job. Victims of male violence sometimes came, bloodied and bruised, asking the councillor for help. One had an engorged eye. Her entire face was swollen, red, and terribly, terribly disfigured. And she asked for advice. But again, what were her exit options? Where could she go? Then a couple of months ago, I received a message on Instagram. A Zambian woman who had hosted me in a remote village had been abandoned by her husband, and he had remarried and taken all their assets. So she was now destitute and living in a shack, and she couldn't simply make money because she didn't have the capital to buy dried fish for resale. So obviously, I, Alice Evans, wanted to send her money, but that was actually very, very difficult because there was no local infrastructure for digital payments. So instead, what we did is another relative had to travel 6 hours to Lusaka to physically pick up the cash. So many sub-Saharan African women face similar challenges. They bear multiple children, they struggle to secure decent work, and then they remain economically insecure. While abused women could leave, many stay because they believe their children will be better off. In Zambia, I heard one term repeated over and over, ukushipikisha. Shipikisha means to endure. You endure that violence, you endure that poverty. So cultures of violence can reinforce acceptance. I mean, over 70% of sub-Saharan Africans say that their parents may be justified in beating their children. That's from Afrobarometer. And that share is lower amongst those who are educated and wealthier. But since sub-Saharan African GDP per capita remains low, violent discipline remains widely accepted. Now, Central Africa has very, very high rates of intimate partner violence, just like other conflict-afflicted places like Iraq and Afghanistan. So cultures of violence can spread across multiple domains, both criminality and people's homes. So let me summarize. So gender interventions will have the highest returns if they address regionally and country-specific binding constraints. Across sub-Saharan Africa, this is primarily economic stagnation and violent conflict. Now, of course, there is a lot of regional and religious variation. You know, look at North and South Nigeria. But my point here is that sub-Saharan Africa's gender relations are hugely affected by economic stagnation. The fact that there has been no growth in 30 years, no growth per capita. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Dr. Alice Evans, and this is Rocking Our Prayers.